Okay, my name is Sydney McNamer. Today is October 2nd, 2015. It is now 1 o'clock, and I am interviewing Chris DeMacco at Windy City Gaming.
Windy Gaming.
Or Windy Gaming, sorry.
Those guys are gambling.
Oh, okay. Could you please give me a description of your business?
Yeah, I'm a import-heavy video game shop, online-based, on the convention circuit as well. So between Japanese arcade and Japanese home system.
Okay. Could you explain a typical day for you?
Typical day. Well, there's two kinds of days that I have. One is, I'm coming in early, filling in orders, and, whatever social marketing I need to do that day, replying to emails, staying in touch with my customers. Mm-hmm. And then the other days are if I'm in import mode, when I am restocking or gaining new product, I end up switching over to, Tokyo time, and then I'm, waking up at 2 in the afternoon because I'm staying up till 6 in the morning.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, then just staying in touch with, the people overseas just to make up for the time difference.
Okay. And, when did you start your business?
It would have been unofficially September of 2012.
Okay.
And officially would be January of 2015. Okay. When I officially filed paperwork.
Okay, perfect.
Work.
Do you, well, I saw your inventory, but do you also buy, sell vintage console games or things like darts or pinball?
Yes, I do. Well, there's a lot of console in the other closet. Mm-hmm. Which I kind of opened up for you guys just so you can see what else is going on. I do deal in American stuff when it does come my way, but just because people like to have, options. Mm-hmm. If I come across it, great. If I don't, everyone knows me as an import shop. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've done a couple of pachinko or Apache slots. There's one right over there.
I did see that one, yeah.
Pinball, less so. That's just another nightmare I don't want to really play so well with. I've owned a couple of tables, which I no longer have.
Yeah. Is there a particular reason you don't deal in those? Or is
in
it just
pinball?
Yeah.
Pinball is just, it's a nightmare of wires. I equate it to like someone's father's old Fiat in the garage, where it's the best car in the world when it's going 2 months out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot of maintenance. It's just a lot of stuff that is, if you're going to sell it, you need to be perfect with everything, and everything needs to be always going, and they have a habit of breaking down when people show up. So, mm-hmm. I've dealt in a couple, probably not going to go down that road again. It's a high ticket with a high rate of failure. So,
okay.
It's not really where I'm at.
That makes sense. All right. And do you mostly, you work alone? You do everything by yourself?
I got a couple people that help me out. Mm-hmm. I got two college kids that come with me on the road when I do conventions. They get free road trips and, staying in fun hotels and stuff, mm-hmm. Across the country. Every now and then one or two of them come in to help me with, bagging, pricing, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I do have a tech. He comes in, does a lot of the repair work. He does a lot of other stuff in that range. And then one or two other people like to pop in from time to time because they like playing with this stuff. So
that's cool. All right. And is the industry close-knit? So do you know like a lot of other people that deal in the same business?
Yeah. In terms of being a vendor or being a dealer, yeah, it's pretty close-knit, and a lot of people know each other. People are leery of the new guy. It's just, you sit there and you prove yourself, and I've been fortunately, accepted by a lot of them, and a lot of them know
That's
me,
cool.
And they know me by, both name and face, so they know my brand, and they know what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Some, it's a lot less on, say, like, the developer side, where some of them know me, but yeah, I'd be more on the indie side. Microsoft has no idea who I am, but in that terms, it's a good community of people. There's, there's all this Facebook groups of small shop owners, and there's other things where we all kind of bang our heads together and, indie shops unite, kind of stuff.
Yeah. So does it mostly help you, or does it ever hinder, is there ever that competition?
No, well, me, I'm online, so I'm everywhere. And then when I hit the road again, I go everywhere. You know, we were just in 2 weeks ago, Northern Wisconsin, and 3 weeks ago it was Columbus. You know, do Milwaukee. We've done Texas, Kansas City. You know, we make the rounds. Philly, done New York. I'm native there, so it's nice to see family.
From New York?
Yeah. Excuse me. Sorry. Just ending for me. I feel not contagious enough to have you. So, I mean, they all know who I am, but I'm a specialty shop. A lot of the other shops really, really focus primarily on North American release stuff. So I'm in the interesting position of being able to kind of, you know, walk among the crowd without pissing anybody off, mm-hmm. at least so much. I mean, there's a couple other guys that, you know, whatever. Some of us bang our heads, but most guys are very, very, very cool. And it's very, very, very nice and warm. You know, after conventions, a lot of times, bunches of us will just go out for, you know, pizza and beer after, or just, you know, that's hang awesome. Out and, hey, how was your show? Awesome. How was your show? That kind of stuff.
That's cool. So would you consider the industry fairly large on your level?
On my level, very large. Mm-hmm. Big primary reason why I did specialty, like I focused on something. Aside from there's a lot of independent game stores opening now. And there's also, you can't throw a rock without seeing someone on Craigslist, you know, flipping Nintendo games, or same thing on eBay. eBay's a, you know, a mess of that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I came into business as a collector, and, you know, just kind of how I ended up in business was, this was a troll job. That's what this was. It happened, you know, right a little before that September. I told you I got into an argument with a dealer, and he had a store. He had everything any startup could ever want. He had financial backing. He had a ridiculous location, high-end neighborhood, high-end everything, high-end stock, and he took his customers for granted, and he was just really, really, really had a disdain for the customer base, and he was also grossly overpriced, and he was just a nasty guy, and you know, Wendy happened because it was sort of a, you know, it was an online forum argument, you know, like internet drama, you know, that kind of stuff. And it was neener, neener, neener. I can have a store too, and I'll hurt yours. And so, you know, that's what I did. I started doing import, and import was a grossly underserved part of the problem, of the industry. And that's why I was able to kind of grow in the way that I did. This was $300 2 years ago.
Wow.
That's what I put into it. And then I think over the course of those 3 years, I put a couple grand in, but this is mostly natural growth. And it was really, just, like I said, it kind of grew from there because people knew me as, hey, import guy, go see the import guy. You want to get an import? It's awesome. A lot of the times they're cheaper than the American release, because, well, you know, unless you can read Japanese,
yeah.
You know, some of them are dual language, which is nice, but, you know, it's just kind of how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff didn't come out here.
Okay. How has the industry changed since you started? I know it's, like, fairly recent.
No, but it actually has changed a lot.
Yeah.
It's prices continue to go up. A lot of, like, my other distributors, other people are trying to hit the import game now. Because, again, it was a cheaper market. And other people are trying to get in, so it's jumping my prices. Because my distributor's like, well, I know we've been working with you for years now, or a couple of years at least, but this guy just showed up, and, you know, he's willing to give me this. And I go, all right, you know, give it to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's no money to be made there after you ship it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cause shipping from Japan, not cheap.
Yeah.
You know, an average, you know, 20-pound box that I would get from Japan, and I get, you know, 8 or 10 at a time. You know, it's about $2 to $2.50 a piece just to ship.
Oh, wow.
That's just my shipping cost. Yeah. And that's before I fill up the boxes.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's what I do. What's different from a lot of people is I guarantee everything that's out there. So
mm-hmm.
if you get something or it doesn't work right, all my customers know, hey, you know, no one could be perfect. As much as I want to be, I know I have a very, very high customer satisfaction rate. And that's why my customers come back to me. My concept was to keep the prices sane. A lot of independent stores, brick and mortar, their prices are going to be higher because they have a huge amount of overhead. Mm-hmm. I looked maybe for a brick and mortar initially. And, I mean, for a tiny little outlet, you know, or a tiny little storefront in an okay neighborhood, I'm looking at $2,000 to $3,000 a month plus utilities plus all this other stuff that you need to make up for. Mm-hmm. And that leads to a lot of, you know, marked up prices. And I understand that side. I'm not, you know, it's not nothing to be mad about. But then people see that, then they make their prices on eBay that, and then it just, everything feeds into itself. So, you know, I try to price myself about 10% below eBay and make up for the difference in volume. And again, people like that. They like to say, okay, this guy's got a price.
That's awesome. Yeah. So what would be an ideal day for you?
An ideal day?
Yes.
All the orders. I mean, just, yeah, someone coming in, sell a couple of machines, websites hopping. You know, I mean, that's really, you know, why I do it. You know, it's... Ideal is, you know, not necessarily how it works. It's small business. Yeah. You know, you get a couple of days like that a year, and it's really, really nice. A good ideal day at, like, a convention is when I know I'm pacing myself for a five-figure weekend. Those are the best. When I know it's a rockin' show, and I'm going to be able to really, really come out ahead on this, because that lets me get more interesting stock as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so could we go back to conventions, because I actually didn't know you did that. So could you, walk me through the steps of how that happens?
So, this is actually my favorite show, Midwest Gaming Classic. it's up in Milwaukee. And let's just talk to them for a minute, because I'll wax poetic about these guys forever. It's my favorite show of the year.
Okay.
You know, and I've been doing that show since I've existed, and I was a convention goer. Some shows are more just kind of like flea market sale-a-thons. Other shows have they have gaming areas. They got a lot of things going on. These guys really have everything. They have a very, very rich market. They have a lot of great exhibits, things to do, from both tabletop to everything. And that's what these guys do. These guys are just amazing. So what you do is, you know, you reach out to them when it's time to, you know, apply. You find out when and where the shows are. And, you know, when it's time for vendors to sign up, you sign up. And they'll send you a contract, and you pay them money, and you get a booth. Depending on how much money you get is how much booth you get. So from 1 8-foot table to over there, I've become something of a draw. I don't want to sound like I'm speaking up, but a lot of my customers come there for me, and a lot of people know what I do. I have a background in specialty food, and at the retail level, where I would be, I was a cheese broker, which is like being a stockbroker but with dairy, and I would go to stores and help them market and do all the other stuff. So I have that background where I knew how to retail market. So when I do my displays, when I do everything else, this show last year, so I'd started with like 2 tables the first time I did it. Then I had a 50-foot straightaway table set the year after that. And then last year I had a private sales room.
Wow.
Where people would come in and I'd set up pop-up shop style and their island displays, you know, shelves, all kinds of stuff. I'd just bring it in and I'd build a store for the weekend. That's more of the extreme end. It's usually a series of tables. Then customers would come, they would buy their admission, and they're either going to play some games, or they would hit the market. Usually market gets hit early hard, because everyone wants to get the stuff before it's gone. And then it get hit again on Sunday, because, you know, a lot of times there's deals to be had for people that don't want to take some stuff home, or whatever. But that's kind of the... that's kind of the in and out of it all, really. You go, you work like a madman for 2 to 3 days, and then you relax. Most people just sort of, you know, jet right after the show. That show in particular and a couple other shows, I stay one extra night because I'm wiped. I can have one nice night in the hotel, go out to dinner, celebrate, whatever, and just chill for a night, and then hit the road the next day. So that's kind of that's that work for you?
Yeah, that's perfect. I've actually never been to a convention
You
before,
should
so it's
go.
always really
Go
interesting
to the
to
one in Milwaukee. It'll blow your mind.
When is it?
April.
April?
I believe it's April 10th this year.
Okay, I
The weekend
probably
of the
will,
10th.
because that's really cool.
Yeah, it's like $25 to walk in the door,
Oh,
but
that's
there's a lot of
perfect.
stuff to do.
Awesome. So what do you think is best about your industry?
Best is there's no shortage of creative minds. A lot of people are very, very, very nice. And a lot of people want to do the right thing for the hobby, for the communities. That's what I like to think that I'm doing. Like, I'm trying to keep it for the player, for the end user. There's a couple of kinds of dealers where you'll see guys that only deal in super high-end. Holy cats, look at that thing. It's still sealed and it's encased in Lucite. We'll never play this game. And that's fine if that's what you collect. I'm not going to rip on it, except for that. I deal a lot of my stuff is what's called gamer condition, which is you want to play with it. It's very, very playable. I certainly have my share of, I got some pretty nice stuff. I'm not joking around. I got some nice things. But I have a lot of very approachable stuff. You know, you need to have a perfect mix, inbox, matching serial, crazy system with all the games. I can do that, but you just want a little Super Famicom so you can play your Japanese Super Nintendo games. I can do that on the cheap as well, and that lets me kind of, breach all the markets.
Okay. And least about your industry.
Kind of the opposite of that. So there's I believe the technical word is there's asshats out there. I don't know if you could use that in class, but that's the word I use. There's some guys that, one, are so staunchly anti-seller of anything. So whether or not I'm a legitimate business like I am, or the Craigslist guys, or whatever, and some of the Craigslist guys are a little shady. I've known some of them. They're whatever. I'm not gonna, again. They do what they gotta do. I do what I gotta do. Not that the path should cross. Then there's other guys that will literally just, people that want to see the world burn. I had a situation a little while ago with someone that never did any business with me that decided to try to slander my name, and he ended up costing me a lot of money. And unfortunately, when stupid, internet drama meets whatever. These are the guys that are cheering me on one day, and then all of a sudden I show a little success, and some people want to, take you down a peg. I had a lot of very, very good support, which I'm very thankful for. That really kind of quashed it before it did a ton of damage, but, I still had to face the repercussions of it. Some people are, whatever, they're anti-shop or they're anti-whatever. Keep a community, And that's, I always tried to be a community shop. I always tried to be, keep my prices in check where they're not, you're not going nuts with what are you charging me for. But you can walk in with a couple of bucks. I'll tell you a really good, quick story. This happened in northern Wisconsin 2 weeks ago. The show wasn't exactly a big show. I knew the showrunners personally. They wanted me to go up for a couple of years. And they're very, very nice people. He's a great guy. So I went up there and, helped him out. It's not a show I would normally go to. It's usually, that's a little small for me. But I went and it was a bunch of people that didn't have any money to spend. And someone came up to me and he looks down and he sees a DS. It was just a little old Nintendo DS. It was a first gen. And one of the hinges was cracked, but it still held open just fine. It's priced accordingly and it said $22. And he looks down and he goes, "So is that a DS?" And I go, "Yeah." And it's $22. And I go, "Yep." So you're telling me for $22, they give you $22, I can have a DS of my very own. And it was kind of funny, when it was happening. I'm like, me, I had one of those college kids came up with me to that show. I mean, it was past Green Bay, like it's 300 miles straight north. Like, holy cats, is Wisconsin still happening? Why am I not in Canada yet? North. And on the drive home, we were talking about that guy, and it ended up being a really, really nice, almost warm and fuzzy, where I was able to really make this guy's day, because I was able to kind of keep the prices in check. There was another guy selling DSs that, you know, and these are not even like the 3D, like this is the older ones, and his prices started at like $45, $50, and I was less than half of that, and this guy that couldn't afford, you know, a 7-year-old, not even considered vintage machine, and he came over and he got it, and he was able to get a couple of games for it with me. I think he spent like $35, and he was just the happiest camper. And he got exactly what he wanted, and, you know, to know I made a guy's day, you know, is why I do it. And it's the same thing with the candy cabs, the Japanese machines. People look all over the place for these things. I looked for 2.5 years to find my first one.
Wow.
And I drove to Detroit for it. And it's still in my basement because I love that machine. And I drove up to Detroit and I realized that my Equinox didn't quite fit this machine in there the way I had measured it. And I had to kind of take it apart very carefully to kind of make it fit in there and drive home and then reassemble it when I get home. But it was just, you know, like I said, it's that discovery. It's going out. And that's why I started bringing those in. That was a big part of it for me was, you know, people are looking for these. And I made it very easy. Out west coast, easier to get. Ports over there. People bring them in over there. A lot more common out there. Midwest over, it was a desert. Now I'm bringing these things in. They're starting to be more whatever. I was the guy that lowered the price nationally on them, and I feel good because now they're not cheap, but they're also a lot more approachable. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone started to adhere to my price point, which was really, really interesting to show what kind of actual reach I had, because everyone would go like, oh, you want $1,100 for it. This guy's got it for $9, and he's got multiple. I can go and pick and choose. He'll get on Skype with me, and I do that. If someone's out of state, I'll get on Skype. I'll walk the room and let him pick a machine. We'll fire them up right there. So
that's really awesome.
Yeah, so it's nice when I can make someone's day. Like, that's really, that's a big part of it, because, you know, small business guy doesn't get paid much, but I take what I get, what I can get.
Yeah. So what, if anything, would you change about the industry?
Excuse me. The general sourpussiness. There's a lot of, like I was saying before, like the guys that are just out to watch the world burn, or the guys that want to complain, or the guys that want to do whatever. I have guys that come to me, I'm not even joking, will pick up 5 copies of the same game and will give me an outrageously low offer on all 5 of them. It's very obvious. You're not even trying to hide what you want to do with it. You know what it is that you have in your hand. That's why you have 5 of them. And, you know, you clearly want to make a profit off of another store, and I just look at it, you know, like, come on, guys. Seriously? Like, you want 2 of them? Great, I'll give you a couple of dollars, and there you go, you know. I make my prices low enough to where, you know, the meat's off the bone. But, you know, kind of is what it is with those guys. I mean, I just want everyone to be happy. That's really it. This is completely embarrassing. I'm stuck. I'm going to lose a shoe here, so I'm sorry. There we go.
That's all right.
That was ridiculous. I've never done that before.
That's all right. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's classy. All right.
Okay, moving on.
Moving on. I'm going to not put my foot up anymore.
Okay. So how do you feel about places like Chuck E. Cheese or Dave & Buster's, or like the really commercialized arcade?
They have their place. Mm-hmm. Dave & Buster's has a lot of much newer stuff. Mm-hmm. Chuck E. Cheese is more, you know, tickets for prizes. And Dave & Buster's has a lot of that as well. Mm-hmm. I'm not offended by them. I'm not the biggest fan. Really, I mean, well, I guess I'm offended by Chuck E. Cheese because their pizza is brutal. Yeah. I mean, I'm from New York. I lived in Chicago for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And you want to hand me a slice of Chuck E. Cheese? These are two big pizza towns. Like, for the love of all things holy, what are you guys thinking? The pizza is really the only thing offensive about Chuck E. Cheese to me. Because, you know what? It's little kids. And they want to go and have their fun. And the parents want to go have a, you know, Chucky beer over on the side, and it's all whatever. Dave and Buster's is just Chuck E. Cheese for adults. It just, it's an expensive arcade. But the resurgence of the arcade, that's really where it's at right now. Like, Dave and Buster's is cool, and I guess they're catching some residual, you know, bonus attendees because people want to play arcade stuff again. But it's really all about the real arcades for me. I mean, those guys, I don't even consider them arcades. They're just, you know, they're just, you know, chains. They're there, you know. It's like saying you're going to go to Shake Shack, and call me a homer, or Portillo's, or you're going to go to McDonald's and get a burger. I mean, yeah, it's a burger. I mean, or Shake Shack is delicious. So is Portillo's, you know, or, you know, In-N-Out Burger, wherever else you're going.
I actually work at In-N-Out Burger.
Do you?
Yeah, that just like made my day.
No, In-N-Out's my favorite, man. In-N-Out, Whataburger, oh my gosh.
All of the above.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This is some great chains out there. Just, those are the smaller regional things, or it's like, you know, 7-Eleven or Wawa if you want to go out east, which is, my little brother has a Wawa tattoo. It's ridiculous. Like, it's, like, that's how serious that place is out there. Yeah. You end up in Jersey or New York or something, walk into a Wawa, your mind will be blown.
Okay, I will do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually have some friends over on the East Coast going to school, so I'm going to go visit them.
Ask them about Wawa. Go to Wawa. Oh my gosh, it's sandwich, it's like, it's everything. I swear to Christ. Oh my God, it's like the greatest 7-Eleven you've ever been in.
Oh wow.
Oh yeah, it's unreal.
Okay.
Sorry. Continue on. Sorry.
Sorry. No, that was...
Don't get me waxing poetic about delicious things back east.
Okay. Do you have any favorite experiences while working on the industry? I guess you mentioned the DS.
The DS guy was great. A couple of YouTubers came, semi-popular guys that I've collaborated with, which is very, very nice. Hang on. Excuse me.
Are you okay?
I got to meet James Rolfe on a couple of occasions, which was, he's a cool guy. I don't know if you know who he is.
I don't.
Angry video game nerd. Like, he's one of the, he's like the, like, A-list YouTube guy.
So is it like R-O-L-P-H?
R-O-L-F-E.
F-E?
Okay. Yeah, he signed one of the carts over there that him and his co-host for his YouTube show, that's the Game Sack guys above that.
Oh, okay.
Those are some popular YouTubers that, whatever. I'm doing the diner thing where everything's, like, too windy. You know, it's
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, you know. You know, when a guy like him comes in, who's very, very, very knowledgeable on it, and he was able to kind of, I remember showing him the Japanese version of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, just because it was a fun, weird thing. Mm-hmm. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out is a fairly rare title in Japan. Mm-hmm. Very common here. It came out here first, then it went to Japan. Again, a rarity, because they got the original Punch-Out, and, you know, we ended up getting the original Punch-Out when Mike Tyson went to jail. So it's a rarity out there because they got Mike Tyson's punch out, you know, because he had just gotten the championship. You know, they hired Mike Tyson pre-championship to be the head of this game because he was cheaper than the actual champion at the time. And then Mike Tyson went on to be one of the greatest champions of all time, so they still had his rights, sent him off to Japan. About 2 months later, he went to jail.
Oh,
so they were just pulling that off the shelf. Like, ah! And what was interesting was it was really lazy packaging, but amazing at the same time, where they didn't translate the program into Japanese. So I don't know if you ever played the game.
I haven't.
There's little bits in between where there's kind of tips and clues as to how to beat the boxer between rounds that you're facing. And it's still in English. And these poor Japanese guys
don't
speak English, or can't read English at least. And English is not necessarily an easy language. But there's the manual, and then below the manual is a separate dictionary that it came with pictures of every single screen and the translation of every single screen. And it was very, very, very funny that they just threw in a dictionary as opposed to reprogramming, because I guess that was cheaper to make a little book. And I showed him that, and it blew his mind. He's talking about it. He's, yeah, it was very, 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 it was a cool experience. Honestly, I mean, the best part is, you know, it's getting the FaceTime. I get a lot of Facebook messages, Twitter, a lot of interaction online. And when they come, they'll see I'm wearing my Windy shirt or whatever. Like, are you the Windy Gaming guy? That's awesome. Come on, I bought like four things from you. Oh, yeah. And when you put the names to the face, and that's a big part of why I do the conventions, too, is I get the FaceTime in with these guys. You know, they show that it's not just, you know, some guy with a shop like Amazon, but for import games. It's, you know, there's a guy behind this, and he's the guy doing this, and it's very, very nice. People shake my hands. I had to sign an autograph once, which is very, very weird. Not something that I would ever think would ever happen, just because I'm a retail store, man. You know, like, I'm not, you know, whatever. But when people are excited to meet me or are really jazzed about what I do, that's really, that's the best. I mean, because it's validation. It's saying, okay, I'm on the right path. You know, that's how I, you know, that's how I did it.
Yeah. So what would you say to someone who's dismissive of modern coin-op?
Go to hell? no, I mean, you know, yeah, modern coin-op, you know what, some people want to stay in the golden age, or some people want to go to the, you know, the 90s, say the 90s are the best, or some people say whatever. You know what, it's all the same thing, man, just technology grows. If you look, on the wall, right there, those are arcade boards. That's all that's in an arcade machine that makes them work.
Yeah.
It's, see that one, the big, like, the gold edge on the side?
Yes.
That's all you need to plug in to make an arcade machine work. That's it.
Wow.
That's the only thing. Those are just my tester boards. And when, you know, that's what they all look like. And now today's modern coin-op, you usually has like an i5 inside, pushing 8 gigs of RAM, hard drive, all kinds of, you know, it's a computer. And yeah, so I mean, yeah, it's going to be more powerful. I mean, yeah, it's going to have all the bells and whistles. So, one, there's a certain amount of charm on the old stuff. The new stuff doesn't have that charm because, well, it's new. It hasn't had a chance to, you know, get a luster going. But it's really, like, I've had so much fun playing modern coin-op as much as I do in the old ones. You know, put me in front of a BlazBlue cab and you've lost me for the day. You know, put me in front of, you know, Mario Kart GP or any number of other coin-op, you know, modern games. Initial D is a great one. A lot of the Bimani guys, the Beatmania, the Rhythm Gamers. There's some really cool stuff happening. Mm-hmm. And it's just awesome to see it. And then, yeah, nothing's wrong with Donkey Kong. I love Donkey Kong. You know, I'll play Final Fight. We got Final Fight on the wall over there, or it's over on the wall over there. You know, I'll play, you know, whatever. They're games. They're there to be enjoyed. If you're dismissive of it, then you know what? That's someone less online getting in my way when I want to play it, because you're missing out. That's all I got to say to that. I mean, whatever you want to call it, retro versus modern, and then various retro people. Like, I don't go pre-NES. You know, I don't play with the Atari era below for a reason, because it's just not where my crowd is. But some guys will only play, you know, oh, I have to play, you know, I have to kick my Galaga score up, or all these super classic games, and they won't even go near a Street Fighter 2. And again, it's one of the greatest games ever made, one of the most balanced, perfect controlling games that looked good doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 91. You know, it's still a 25-year-old game. You know, it's still old. So, I mean, some people look down on the 90s stuff. And I think that was, for me, that's my favorite era. Just because that's where they really, like, graphics, color, things looked like things. You know. So it's kind of where I'm at with that. Yeah, sorry if that was kind of rambly. But,
I don't know, that's
yeah,
fine.
I just think you're missing out if you dismiss something.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for someone who wants to get started in the industry?
Don't. It's an uphill struggle. It's what it is. It always is. If you're going to do it, have money behind you. That's big advice. I've gotten to a point where, you know, I built up my business credit enough to where I have a business line of credit, which has certainly helped. If you're going to do it, you're all in, man. It's going to be grating. It's going to be difficult. And right now, it's a hot commodity. So if you're going to do it, you're getting on when the prices are the highest. So, you know, the whole key to business being buy low, sell high, you're buying high now. Right now is probably not the best time to get in. If you want to do it, God bless you. We could always use another person jumping in, but it's going to be an uphill battle. I mean, that's just the truth of it all.
Okay. Is it difficult to buy or sell the machines at certain points? Or is it always like, I guess for you it sounds like it's just kind of...
Are you talking about like the arcade machines?
Yeah.
Yes and no. It kind of comes in bursts where, excuse me again, you know, I'll get like 20 people that want something and then it'll turn into two or three people that end up buying. You know, you got to talk to each one of them like they're going to buy, you know, but, you know, a lot of them will just fall off and they're like, oh, well, I can't do that. You know, how about I give you a third of your price? I don't know why you would ask that. Would you go to a car dealer and say, hey, nice $30,000 car, here's $10,000? No. You know, it's one of those things where it's a lot of ebb and flow to it. My home stuff, always in demand. The machines, again, people will see an article on them or they'll see something on them and they'll be like, yeah, I need one of those. I had someone call me up yesterday saying, I've been looking for a candy cab forever. Great. What kind are you looking for? Here's what I have in stock. And he's like, oh, well, I need this, 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 or this. And what he does is he labels off. Like he read an article of the 12 most rare, let's go unicorn hunting machines. And these are machines that, without a game in them, just machine in barely playable condition, can be $4, $5, $10 grand a pop for me to buy before he gets it. And he's like, well, I don't want, you know, the one that everybody has. Well, not everybody has that. And that's the one that you want, because if you've never done it, that's the perfect starter machine. And, you know, whatever, I try to give advice. So, it is what it is. So.
Okay. Is it typical to buy new arcade machines?
New? Not really. No. It can happen. I know of a couple of vendors in China, Hong Kong, that basically make those machines now, but not by Sega. Mm. Especially new like that, you're not going to find, you know, CRTs are kind of on the outs. If you want to get into HD gaming, like you were talking earlier about modern, then yeah, you can buy new machines or new blank cabs without games set to them. But, you know, the answer to that is 75% no, 25% yes. You know, new machines, yeah, you can do it, and I've done it, just less often.
How often do machines need repairs?
Depends. Really depends on the machine. Like I was saying before, pinball, it's great. The 2 months out of the year, they work. Although some machines, you know, do better than others. Arcade machines, generally, pretty easygoing. I know I do tune-ups on mine where I'll discharge the monitor and change out the buttons, redo the wiring harnesses just as maintenance. But actual repairs, less so. They're pretty sturdy things. There's a couple of models out there that are real finicky, and people know to, unless I need to, you know, catch them all like a Pokemon. It's, you know, people tend to avoid some of the, you know, the nasty ones. But usually, you know, most cabs, pretty reliable.
Are they expensive to repair?
Again, it's about what went wrong.
Which one?
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, you fry a harness. $20 new harness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you blow your chassis, $300. You know, your tube, find a tube, good luck. You know,
yeah.
You know, power supplies could be a couple $100, could be $50, depending on what you need. You know, like I said, it can be expensive, but most general repairs, especially if you're fairly handy with electronics, you own a multimeter, you can figure out, troubleshoot your problem. There's a huge community of people out there that collect. So those guys will be like, hey, what's up? Here's what's wrong. Here's what my meter reads. And they'll be like, okay, yeah, cab kit. You know, cab kit's $30 in an hour of your time.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, look, I'm running again. Yay.
All right. So, let's see. Are some games more difficult to obtain or sell than others? So that sounds like, yeah, that could be,
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I mean, you have things like if you want to talk home stuff, you know, every Nintendo came with a Mario Duck Hunt, you know. Not everyone, but you know, a little hyperbole never hurt anyone. The game called, you know, some people try to push the value of that because it's Mario on it for like $10 to $20. It's like a dollar game. Like it really like I give them away sometimes. Or you get something like Stadium Events, which is a five-figure game. You know, like there's a reason it's five figures because you know there's X amount out there. You know, some games are. What's interesting was when there's hype on a game. So take Earthbound. Earthbound is a perfect example of a perfect storm. It didn't sell well on like the rare, uncommon, common scale. It's an uncommon game. It's not exactly, you know, it's not as common as Mario, Mario 3, something like that. But you know, they sold a couple hundred thousand copies, and it's not a hard game to find. But that game holds a weird charm and a weird value because that game has been inflated and hyped so hard by so many collectors. All of a sudden, now it's a $150, $200 game when that's usually a price reserve or something that's a little bit more scarce. So you can kind of, you know, you can find anything, just be prepared to pay the price.
What is your favorite game to play?
My favorite.
I know
I
this is
have a
going to be
few.
difficult.
Right now, it's Rocket League. Current gen, right now, I can't get enough Rocket League. I tweet to them because I love them so. It is such a perfectly dumb game. I love it to death. Games I can go back to would be the Twin Bee games all day. Twin Bee, I'll do that forever. A lot of like the manic bullet hell shooters, specifically Cave, Treasure, those are the publishers. Those guys just they know how to make a game. I just love them. I'm a little stuffy now. I'm trying to think. You know, I always go back. Lunar, the Lunar series is something I play multiple times a year. Same thing with Secret of Mana. I've done Secret of Mana so much where that's very texty, that game. I just play it in Japanese now, and it freaks people out. It's very funny. It's just kind of how I do it.
Is there particular reasons why you're attracted to those games, or is it just playability?
They're just playability. Like, you know, Secret of Mana, a friend of mine had when I was a kid growing up, and he was like, "Oh my God, this is the best," and he loaned it to me, and I just never returned it. One of those, like, everyone has that story. It's kind of funny. I feel bad about it. One of these days, I'll relink up with my childhood chum, you know, and say, "Hey, I got your Secret of Mana. So I still have his game. I have my own copy now, just in case we ever run into each other, I can hand it to him." Or, you know, the Lunar game was such a really good exercise in storytelling. There's two main games in that saga, and then there's, I don't know, another handful of very poorly constructed games that were a bad excuse for cashing in on the property title. But those first two games were just unbelievably good storytelling, the right amount of prettiness and whatever, you know.
Do you think the coin-op business is still significant in modern society? It's still.
I don't know if it's significant again yet. It's on the rise. You have guys like the Galloping Ghost, who I know personally. Those guys are unbelievable. Those guys are really just—I mean, they're really—they're leading the pack right now in terms of bringing coin-op back. You know, there's the guys up at Nickel City, up in Northbrook. I think there's two of them. They do a good job. There's a couple smaller arcades, and they're kind of popping up again. There's a couple of great arcades out in California. There's a couple of candy-type arcades. Out there as well. New York has got a couple happening. You know, they're happening in Texas. They're happening. It's coming back. Would I say it's significant just yet? No. But it could be. I love the resurgence of it because this is stuff that all I wanted to do when I was a kid was go to the arcade. And there was a spot. My dad lived in Texas and he took us there, and I was called. Like it was like Dime City or something like that. It was some ridiculous name. and every game was 10 cents. Like, it blew my mind because he was still putting quarters or 50 cents or a dollar, mm-hmm. you know, into these things. So we'd go there and he'd give each, me and my brothers, each of us, we'd get a $10 bill. And we'd get 100 dimes. We just feed these things all over the place, you know. It's the only time I ever beat Willow in an arcade. Mm-hmm. If you remember that movie, there was an arcade game. You should watch it.
Okay.
It's ridiculous. 80s fantasy movie with a young Val Kilmer.
Okay.
Deeply entertaining. So yeah. Oh, he likes my Dolans, huh?
What?
He's taking pictures of my Dolan.
Let's see. Arcade games aren't as popular as they used to be, so how has that, like, affected you personally through your business or just in life?
Well, they're not as popular as they used to be, but every day they're getting a little more popular. Like I was saying before, it's a resurgence. So being able to jump and, you know, say, hey, everyone else kind of wants to have these things. You know, everyone's into, you know, everyone's into this. So, you know, there's just new collectors showing up every day. Whether it's the older players, guys my age now, that are having kids and trying to give their kids a little taste of what they had, or it's something else like that. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, like I said, it's rising again. Whatever it be, it's peak in like the 80s and then the crash and then again in the 90s. Maybe not, but it's a very nice rise and, like I said, it's coming back into cultural significance.
Yeah. Let's see, next page. Okay. Is it common to run into the same people or organizations repeatedly?
Oh, that's yeah. What it sounds like. Yeah, yeah. We, mm-hmm. You know, general crew, we tend to run into, and a lot of us all, you know, we're at the same shows or at the same meetups, the same events, so we all go have, you know, like I said, we'll all go have a pizza and beer together.
So what are the prospects for the industry in 20 years, in your opinion?
In 20 years, it's going to be interesting. A lot of people are been clamoring for the bubble to burst. And that's one thing we are, you know, a lot of people are kind of counting down on, you know, and who survives the bubble. Because this wasn't that big of a bubble even 4 years ago, but it was rising. You'd see it happening. And every 4 or 5 months, oh, the bubble's about to burst. Nope, went higher. Bubble's about to burst, more air. Bubble's about to burst. So it's really, it's when the bubble bursts is when you're going to see what a lot of people are made of. But honestly, every day there's just, like I said, there's new people coming in every day. And what's really interesting is, it's not only that, it's, you know, it's becoming trendy to be into the old stuff. Being a nerd, being a dork, whatever you want to call it, it's cool now. Mm-hmm. Would have helped me in high school. being into this stuff is just, oh, it's rad, there you go, have fun. But yeah, I mean, like it's cool, it keeps growing bigger. So 20 years? Mm-hmm. In 20 years, I expect that it would be tapered a little. Mm-hmm. But in, you know, the next 5 years, I don't see it going anywhere. Maybe 10 years, we're starting to hit some rocky times, but I don't see it going anywhere in the next few years. People are just mm-hmm. are rabid. Mm-hmm. This isn't Beanie Babies, because these you can actually play with or have fun with. These are, you know, there are people that are going to be doing the full collecting, like I said, encasing in Lucite ridiculousness, or the people that want to just build up a collection and have a library. There's a lot of things to be had, or categories accounted for. If you like sports, if you like, you know, RPGs, or if you like action, beat 'em ups, fighting games, there's something for everyone. Evo out in Vegas is a perfect example of that. You familiar with Evo? Mm-hmm. Evo is called the Super Bowl of fighting games. Let me show you something real quick. It's a riot.
Is it just EVO?
EVO. Okay. Come on, wake up. Oh, for crying out loud. There we go. Well, No, let's go with Street Fighter 4. You know what? No, I'm going to go 2014. The Fighters. That was a great game. That's one of my favorites. The Grand Finals. All right. They stream this live, millions of viewers.
Really?
Yeah. And of course, there's an ad. And there's a crowd watching two people play a fighting game.
You could be the one with the sneaker, the gold, the style. You could be the
This is a commercial, so. This is not how the game looks. Yeah. Oh, well, that game looks like that.
You could be yourself. Be the story. NBA 2K16. Star in a Spike Lee joint.
Rated everyone 10 and up.
What's that? So I don't think they're doing a bunch of
They have movies, but... they have announcers.
I'm already
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I know.
I can feel it in my heart. Yeah. It's funny to see the hit stop on the counter when I try it.
Trying to find one that has like a picture of the crowd going on too. Just try to get through it a little so you hopefully hear some of the crowd or something or Oh, you know what? That's a perfect one because you can kind of see what's going on. Sorry about this.
No, that's okay.
Because everything's monetized.
Welcome back to SportsCenter. I'm Scott Van Pelt. Time now for the best available video, which comes to us tonight.
Top four. We're now in losers semifinals.
This is 2012.
But you know what happened earlier in the bracket here?
They all got custom sticks. They all got things built up for them.
Was defeated by Ricky Ortiz and PR Rog. Last team before this tournament.
There was a guy that went really far the other day saying it's not about the giant stick. And he went and played with a pad and he went really far, which is impressive because the sticks give you a whole lot more control.
They had some. Very, very strong matchup fundamentals. They practice the game all the time.
Wow.
They love the 2v2 format. Combo Fiend and Mike Ross, by contrast,
I made it out of the losers. And without him being allowed.
Just kind of get this thing going.
For infiltration's movement, it's very tricky with this character.
So this is a 2v2 game. It's kind of like a tag team match. You just kind of tag each other in.
I really like this character. She's got very strong footsies. She has great. French up close, but Ryu dominates so strongly in footsies against everybody.
Double right there, a perfect.
Wow,
to hear one in the back. I mean, you want to talk about hype? You want to talk about where it's going? This show, I mean, people are winning huge amounts of money to win.
And you always got to think about the team mechanics here.
Do you know how much?
Mike Ross did not get a chance to play.
I don't want to speak at a turn. I know it's at least five figures.
Wow. All the way to the corner, and they're trying to maintain this corner. Yep, that's why they weren't pressing too hard.
I want to say it's getting close to 100K now. This tournament's going on for a while. Huge crowds. And what's interesting is because there are professionals now. I'm sure you've heard of like the gaming leagues and stuff. Hang on. You know what? Let me see a really good one. We can see something here. There we go. So this is Smash Brothers Melee, which is a crazy. This is this year's. It's nuts. Like this is not a messing around industry. These are people that like Smash Brothers. Like, what was supposed to be a kid's game. Like it was never meant to be a competitive fighting game. But it got that way. There's a few really just wacky things always happening, and of course it's lagging. I mean, this is legit size. This is bringing in tens of thousands of people this tournament, and anyone can enter. So, if you wanted to play against the best in the world, because the best in the world fly out to this thing in Vegas, guys come from a million different countries, it's what they do. You can go up against him. You will lose bad. It won't even be pretty. Yeah, you're going to throw away your entry fee unless you've trained. Everyone's going crazy. Hang on one second. Evo. There was one that was just wacky. Is that the one? That might be it. Yeah, they did it. This was another one. This one was a particularly... Look at the crowd. This isn't even Evo. This is a different show. And he's coming in like a wrestler. I mean, they're like rock stars in these rooms.
Yeah.
These are just players. This is just a guy who's good at a video game.
That he's in like a wrestling room.
He's doing Stone Cold. Yeah, like that's what he's doing. Like, and again, streamed to many viewers. And he's there to play a fighter game. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
But I don't want to say it's dumb, but it's that's what they're doing. You know, like that's what I'm talking about. It's not going away in 5 years. It's not going away. Maybe 10 years. You know, it ain't going away anytime soon though. That like you know. It's so ridiculous. It's over the top. This is just tournament play. This isn't even the collectors. Some of the collectors are absolutely rabbits, you know. And then you get the you know, what I affectionately call the HollyTubers. The guys, the high-end, super monetized YouTube guys. So, James Rolfe. Love James Rolfe. GameSack is another one. Awesome show. Guys like... PewDiePie, not my favorite thing in the world, but he's the most well-paid guy on YouTube right now. This guy breaks seven figures in ads.
Wow.
He's in the millions of dollars to make stupid noises at a camera. I'm not even joking. Have you seen him? He's ridiculous. Like, I don't understand why people watch him. He plays terrible games badly, and he just, I'm making a noise. And that's his shtick. And whatever. I mean, but he has a rabid fan base. You know, JonTron, another unbelievable guy. Just unreal. When he walks in a room, you know what, I'll tell you what, when James Rolfe walked in at my table, he had lines around the corner to do the meet and greet thing with him, but then he kind of was trying to stealthily walk the room, and he ended up at my table, and me and him were having that Mike Tyson talk we were talking about. I'm not even joking. Just, he gets mobbed.
Wow.
And me and him are having a conversation, and it's almost rude. Like, it is rude, but, you know, I get it, he gets it, but just people like, oh my god, you know, you want to say, you know, starfucker type of stuff, but that's what he does. Like, he makes a living making videos on YouTube or making whatever, making his thing, and that's awesome. The popularity is through the roof. This is just, you know, just things to know.
Would you say it's at a peak right now, or is it...
I don't even know if it's peaked yet.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, every year it goes up. Hang on just one second. I give... Oh, Jesus Christ. What did he do? I need to know now. This guy, he's a messed up kid. Yeah, and this is unbelievably not politically correct, so I'm going to put it over there and not show you what that is.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, he's a special guy. I love him, but we're just not going to do that. You guys are in college, so you might get offended. I stopped being offended at things a long time ago, after college.
Are arcade machines more popular in some states or cities?
Oh, for sure, yeah. I'll tell you what, I meet very, very few collectors that don't aspire to one day have one. Mm-hmm. Just to have one. Mm-hmm. California, it's huge. West Coast, it's huge. Chicagoland, pretty big. Pennsylvania is very nice. Boston, Massachusetts, that's a crazy, weird segment there. That's a great segment over there. But it kind of gets spotty. You know, Texas gets big, but, you know, other parts of the South, less so. Maybe it's economic differences because you don't see a lot going on in Alabama, but a lot going on, say, like in Dallas. You know, maybe it's something else. Usually when it gets to the more metropolitan areas where you start seeing the real concentrations of people happening. So California in general is a fairly wealthy, well-off state. So you see a lot across the board there. But Illinois gets a little less so once you leave Chicagoland area. And I include Milwaukee in Chicagoland, like that encompassing double metro area that we have here. It's very, very lush with arcade people. But you go kind of out like into Iowa, people don't care. You know, Omaha is a good, you know, so it's really, I think a lot of it circulates around a lot more metro areas.
Let's see. Where would you say is the least popular place where arcade games are?
Least popular place for arcade games?
Yeah.
It would just be, I mean, I don't want to say it like this, but it would be like an impoverished area, like where people don't have the money to do it. It just, you know, so you want to go rural Mississippi? I mean,
yeah.
I don't think I've ever shipped anything to Mississippi. Maybe I made maybe one $10 thing or something, but, you know, it is what it is.
So it's just like where people have the money.
Yeah, it's not a cheap hobby. Mm-hmm. I mean, each of those standing machines are at least $950 a piece when I sell them. So that's a major purchase for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Are there some particular games in your inventory that are more popular than others?
Oh, always. Mm-hmm. So PC Engine is really, really hot right now, which would be the Japanese version of the TurboGrafx-16. So anything playable is just off the shelf constantly. Just people go, oh my god, gimme. It's the same thing for, say, English RPGs are always popular. Anything that, you know, really, really good action heavy, or then or something like, say, James Rolfe or the GameSack guys, if they do a review of a game like that, all of a sudden everybody needs it. Mm-hmm. You know, when Rolf was at the show I was at, you know, the day that I met him for the first time, you know, people were going through my really cheap, terrible original Nintendo cards, mm-hmm. looking for stuff that he reviewed so he could sign a cart. Which is funny. It's why he signed, like, that cart, because he reviewed that game. It was one of his more famous videos. People are looking for, I want this one. Do you have this? I want to get James Rolfe to sign it. And not realizing that before, ahead of time, those games are selling out across the show, so people would have something for those guys to sign.
Wow.
It was outstanding. Yeah, it was a really cool thing, so.
What would you say is the usual age range for people that you sell to?
I know there's kids that are really into it, that and mm-hmm. kids that look for, that seek me out, which for a 35-year-old guy, that's creepy. you know, they'll come out with their parents, but their parents mm-hmm. know me as a reputable guy. So that's mm-hmm. that's plus, you know. But usually late 20s to early to mid 30s. I get some guys in their 40s and 50s, guys that know, you know, have dealt with me before, but usually in that 20s to 30s, that, you know, you get the young guy with his first real career that finally has his own money and now he can get the shit that mom wouldn't let him have. You'll be there soon. And then the same thing with, you know, the older guys. Okay, great. I got my house. I got my car. I got the wife. I got the kid. Now he gets up for me. That's what that is.
Yeah. Is there anything that would draw new customers to the industry that weren't previously in before?
Yeah, they're seeing how much fun all their other friends are having. I mean, that's really it. It's viral. It's video games are huge. People are like, oh, I'm not really into it. Oh, well, I don't know. You know what's a video game? Candy Crush is a video game. Maybe you like puzzle games. Here, try this. This is not going to hit you up for money all the time. You only got to pay for it once. It's Fly. All right.
Okay. Let's see. So that actually finishes all the questions that I have.
Wonderbar.
Is there anything that you want to add?
Buy my stuff. No, not really. I mean, that's a pretty good, I mean, series of things. You know, I think we covered a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Awesome.
Awesome.